Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome. Happy drizzling Thursday out there, right? Wow. June gloom to the max here. All right. We have, and you were reviewing this in the room for me earlier today. This is fifth time repeat offender. It's a lot.
This is the fifth time.
Fifth time repeat offender. The barefoot lawyer, Mr. Ethan Marcus, with the Marcus Family Law Center. His website is barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. Also with us today, and this might be the first time we've had a doctor. No, one or two, but not many. Not many doctors, right?
Yes.
We're in good company here. Dr. Joanna Savaris. Did I get it right?
Savaris. Pretty close.
Her website here is sdbrainworks.com. That's her website, sdbrainworks.com. She is a, wow, look at that, neuropsychology services. That's a pretty fancy word. She has building better relationships with your child, positive ways to talk and listen. And I would imagine there are many of these I can use on my wife as well.
Yes, they go between kids and also relationships.
Okay. So, Megan, if you're out there listening, things are going to change. Eight different points to make things better at home. So, one of the reasons we have the two of them here today is the show is about the business of living in San Diego, which is expensive. It's expensive to live here. Most of us live for our mortgage payment, which is not the way it is in other parts of the world. And, well, getting a divorce is usually going to cost you about 50%. So, in the global perspective, don't get divorced. But let's assume that that is not a possibility. We're going to go down the road of some of the ways, some of the expenses, but more so some techniques that can be used to mitigate the downside. Of course, Dr. Joanna is going to go through some of the emotional sides to keep the children on track, as well as Ethan's going to talk about his federated alliance that he has created. And actually, why don't we start with that, Ethan? Tell us about that.
All right. So, I have to give a lot of credit to you, Ryan, and that is a lot of family law attorneys, they practice and they do the best they can, and they study hard, they learn their judges, they learn client management, and they try to get the best results for their clients, either adversarially in court or collaboratively or through mediation out of court. That's the standard model. But one of the things I really admired about what you do, especially in this show, is you bring a lot of varied professionals together. Bearing in mind that that we're a community of people that are interdependent and we all have something to offer. So you're right, I am a repeat offender. You've invited me back a number of times, and I'm really grateful for that.
Right, I'm a repeat offender.
And I was writing down some notes here as to how we got to this fifth appearance, and I just wanted to go through it really quickly. The point you touched on as you introduced us was the very first point we hit, which was people who are listening to the Real Estate Hour, of course, they're interested in finding a home that's appropriate for them and their family, and also that is a good investment, because often it's the largest investment that they have. And we covered how a lot of investment strategies can be made moot by decisions that don't go so well with regards to their own health, with regards to their children, and with regards to the stability of their families, whether they be intact nuclear families or families in transition. And along with that show, we had Dr. Rochelle Perper, who talked about therapeutic support for people who were in transition to keep their heads together to make good decisions. And that applies to all aspects of life, especially with regards to issues of investment. And the next time we were on, we had Dr. Joshua Fader, who told us a little bit about how to deal with issues of kids with special needs. And I talked a little bit about problems of collaborative approach to divorce. It sounds like that's the best thing to do is have everyone cooperate, but I pointed out some of the pitfalls. But that was that show, and people can listen to that, and it's on our website, and I'm sure yours as well. After that, we had Richard Gordon. He's a mediator, and we talked about the distinctions between collaborative divorce and mediation. And then after that, we got right back into investment. We had Jackie Jarrett of Hamilton Tharp and talking about tax planning and relating to that to the issues of assets and asset division and tax planning in the context of divorce. Today, we're talking about the kids and about parenting. And today, I'm here to talk about what we now have to offer in getting all these professionals together. And again, I have to thank you. The reason I call it a federated alliance is because we are not formally one group. We are all a bunch of independently standing, established firms and corporations that are respected in the community. And we feed off of each other, and we join together in offering a collaborative package, using that word advisedly. So Dr. Savarese is one of the first people to agree to this alliance. We met a few months ago, and she is a neuropsychologist. And we figured out that it would be so beneficial to the clients if they learned early on in an assessment how they might be perceived by third parties as they participate in the court system in terms of their parenting or other behavior. And insofar as they'd be assessed, if there are issues that might be of concern, that they could get help. And we're not talking about faking good. We're not talking about pretending to be good. We're talking about doing things that would actually improve themselves in their real lives, but are, of course, ultimately that has the effect of looking good in court and getting a better outcome. And that is something that I'm able to offer through this alliance.
So we're talking with Ethan Marcus. He is with the Marcus Family Law Center. His website is, again, barefootlawyer.com. And as you referred to before, you can go back to the other shows to hear the explanation of Barefoot Lawyer. But you had mentioned an interesting concept there and explaining how the court might perceive somebody. You mean the court doesn't perceive me the way that I perceive me?
Well, this is something we covered in the very first show. Hearing might be 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes. The court has a very heavy docket, and the court may have had time to read a little bit about you in your file. You may go in there thinking that you have a very reasonable presentation, but without context, the court is not necessarily going to understand. So the lawyer's role, of course, is to digest and present in a way that the court, well, in the court's language, so to speak. But the short answer is no. They don't see you the way you see you. They don't know you. They fit you into categories because they have no choice. And on behalf of the entire system, I apologize for that. But that is the way it is.
Well, so what might be an example of some situation that I would go into court thinking that I'm giving off a certain perception, but really I'm not, that you might be able to tweak?
If that one is, I see that you looked at both of us. I'll give one example, and that is abuse reporting.
Okay.
You may go into court thinking it's absolutely obvious that your child has been abused and you're going in to get help and protection. The danger is you might be perceived as an alienator, someone who contrives abuse allegations for the sole purpose of cutting off the other parent. And I have seen cases where actual abused children have been placed with their abusers because of improper presentation, because they came off as alienators. That's just one example. There are many.
That's a pretty powerful example.
Yeah.
So by having SD BrainWorks involved there, the idea is that the alienator is able to make a better presentation and not come off that way?
Well, from my perspective, if the person actually is an alienator and is misperceiving something that has abuse that is not abuse, yes, SD BrainWorks can help, but I don't think the help would be to make it look any different than what it is, but rather to assist them with their perspectives.
Right. I mean, I think the real goal of the collaboration, or what we would call this pre-screen, is to have the person come in and get a little bit of a better sense of how they function, their coping styles, their defense mechanisms, how they handle difficult situations, how they're currently communicating with their ex-spouse or their children. I mean, going through a divorce and going through this type of situation is very stressful, obviously. It's one of the top most stressful situations that people go through. And so any tools that the individual can have, that they can obtain, that they can practice, any insight that they can gain about their behavior, about the way that they cope, about the way that they present, is only going to be beneficial for them, not only in a context of being in court, but also in their overall, you know, daily life. I mean, going through this situation with the right tools and support and coping strategies, and maybe even working through some of that in a therapeutic way is only going to be really beneficial for the person who's really entering into what some might call a pretty traumatic experience.
Yeah, I would imagine it's extremely traumatic. And as you mentioned, I think there's five big ones, right? Isn't marriage, divorce, buying and selling
death.
A house, death, and well, yeah, death of a loved one, right?
So it's
up there. It's up on the list. It's up there on the list. Got it. So I think I do understand your role here in the Federated Alliance as Ethan is describing it. And so I think what we're going to do when we come back, we're going to talk more about building the better relationship with your child and kind of get into some more examples of how you can assist in that presentation. I mean, we're talking about first impressions, right? And you mentioned 10 to 15 minutes, maybe all you get. That's not much time on a decision that could mean I get my child. I mean, an example you described, it meant I got my child or I didn't. That's a very short period of time mm-hmm. for a very important, well, life decision, I guess it is. And the decision is not up to you. Right?
Right.
Good enough. When we come back, we'll talk more with San Diego Brainworks and Dr. Joanna Savarese. Said woman, take it slow, it'll work itself. Welcome back. We've been talking with Ethan Marcus. The Barefoot Lawyer. His website is barefootlawyer.com. One more time, his website is barefootlawyer.com. Talked a little bit about his Federated Alliance, a one-stop shop that he's creating, if you will, pardon the obvious pun, that is, I think, not the most classy way of describing what he's doing over there, but you are actually going to have all these people under one roof at one point, and we will get back to that later in the show. I'm going to shift gears just a little bit here, and we'll talk with one of the many spokes, I'm sure, in this Federated Alliance wheel. San Diego Brainworks, Dr. Joanna Savarese. Her website, sdbrainworks.com. That's the website, sdbrainworks.com. So you have on here, building a better relationship with your child. 8 positive ways to talk and listen. And as I mentioned, I would imagine a few of these would work on my wife, too.
Right. And I think that that's kind of what I was going to just say, is that this is about building better relationships with your child, building better relationship with your spouse, with your ex-spouse, you know, building better relationships with people who you're around.
Anybody.
Anybody, really. I mean, there are certain things that you can do as a human being that actually will help you in your relationships with other people.
And so we've got 8 on the list here. I'm sure that there are countless numbers of them. But see, these are the biggest 8, the most important 8, the ones easiest to fix. How did you come up with your list here?
You know, I really came up with my list based on what I see a lot in clinical practice.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Very good way of doing it. Real life examples.
Okay. I mean, quite frankly, also from my own personal life. And then the fact that I have 4 children who I'm constantly having to talk to. So I'm sure I could probably
constantly try to have to talk to.
I'm sure I can probably take some advice from myself after we go over the list.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, so I came up with them mostly from just my own clinical experience and then from what I see with my own children.
Okay. Where do you want to start? Which one do you like the best?
Well, you know, I think the first place to really start is with the first one. And they're not really in any order, but the first one is significant in that it really sets the stage for how you're going to be communicating overall with people. And that is the ability to take responsibility of your actions. You know, a lot of times we have, we teach our children to, you know, say sorry when they hit another child on the playground, or, you know, you're yelling at your spouse, you know, you need to apologize first. And, you know, there's this sort of, we teach people and we hope that people will take some responsibility for their actions. You know, as a parent, we aren't perfect, but we are constantly modeling our behavior through for our children. And sometimes it's what the best thing to do is to be able to tell your kids, you know, when you do yell or when you do scream or when you do something that maybe you're not that proud of, to say, you know what, mommy was really upset a few minutes ago, and I'm sorry that I yelled at you. You know, and just kind of give them the, I understand how I've been behaving, and I understand how that behavior might affect you, and I take responsibility for my behavior. And you really can see that there's a mirroring in that, and that children are much more open to you, they're more receptive to the conversations that you have, and they're also more likely to take responsibility and be aware of their own actions, simply by you modeling and being okay with taking responsibility of what you might do wrong in your relationship.
We're talking with Dr. Joanna Savarese. Her website is sdbrainworks.com. That's the website, sdbrainworks.com. Talking about how to build a better relationship with your child, but really they apply to just about anybody. And number one here is take responsibility for your actions, meaning that when you screw up,
own it.
Own it, right. Right.
Just own it.
And I think a lot of that has to do with do what I say, not as I do. I remember my grandpa saying that, you know, many, many years ago. I don't remember what he was talking about. But yeah, I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. And certainly I recognize they utilize our mannerisms. They internalize them. They become a mini me and a mini my wife. And certainly say the same things back to us that we say to them, whether they're the right things for us to say or not.
Right.
Yeah. And I would imagine it's pretty easy to say that the blueprint that our children are going to grow up with is the one we provide.
Right.
Right. And so
Absolutely.
This is it.
Absolutely.
That's not an easy thing to do, though.
It's not, because, I mean, a lot of people, they have their own defenses, so they act in ways to sort of defend against any vulnerability that they might experience or any feeling that they might experience that, you know, evokes some kind of negative emotion. So it's hard for people to really be able to take responsibility, because then they have to sort of admit that they are not themselves perfect or that they've actually done something wrong. Mm-hmm. But it really does, it grounds parents, it grounds couples by each person being able to take some responsibility of their own behavior.
So I would imagine if someone was to come to see you, getting people to take responsibility of the actions would be one of the things you would attempt to get them to do, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we're here with Ethan Marcus and Marcus Family Law Center, and, you know, talking about people going through divorce. And, you know, I work with couples who are divorced, and oftentimes they'll see their kids, and oftentimes they will have very just horribly disrespectful and very emotional conversations via text and, you know, via email, and just you know, the hostility is just so profound and the relationship is so dysfunctional. And part of what I do in this particular situation as it relates to, you know, the divorce, sort of the overarching, you know, some of the topic that we're talking about today, is I have them really take responsibility of their side of the street for their behavior and for how they're responding to the texts, to the emails. And it's really been very effective in having the parents both come in at the same time and really say, listen, you really can't, you know, we know you don't like each other, but your kids are seeing something, they're seeing that, right? And if you can just sit in a room together, and if you can just take some responsibility of the way that you communicate with each other, so much animosity and anger is immediately going to be gone. Because really, when you're communicating and texting and emailing back negative emotions and negative feelings, that will ruin your day. You know, your mind will be constantly thinking about it, and it will ruin your time with your children. You're never present in the moment. So by eliminating that, by having people really take responsibility of their actions, of their behavior, it really kind of decreases so much of the stress and anxiety that they're presently experiencing.
We're talking with Dr. Joanna Savarese. Her website is sdbrainworks.com. That's the website, sdbrainworks.com. I can think of many times where I've typed a nasty email and I've just saved this draft. Right? Like I recognize this email's nasty.
That's smart.
I really, really want to send it. I really want to send it. But I could get 90% of my frustrations out just by writing it.
Right.
And maybe once I actually sent it. But the majority of time, I come back and read it an hour later and
right.
be over it.
Right.
Right? And
right.
I found that to be a really good technique, which is well in line with taking responsibility. It didn't get sent. You know, the negative emotion didn't get passed across. They were essentially Google ate all my nasty emotions.
But it was cathartic.
There.
I mean, you got your feelings
got
out.
Got my feelings out, mm-hmm. and we're able to move on. That certainly does make a lot of sense. And I think, Ethan, you might have mentioned in the green room previously as how all of that stuff is, to some degree, admissible, right? You know, it might turn up in the other party's hands.
Yeah, if you're going to be writing emails, make sure you understand that while you may be sending them to the other side, you are writing them for the court that is judging you. So if you are in litigation, bear in mind everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, just like they say on television.
Okay, perfect. So that was number one. Let's briefly touch on number two, calling out the process.
Right. So number two is like you just said, calling out the process. And a lot of times we try to hide from telling the truth, or we try to hide what we might be experiencing and feeling in the moment. So like, for example, if you're, you know, in an argument with your son or daughter, maybe let's just say that they're a teenager, and you just walk out of the room. Well, by walking out of the room in the middle of an argument, what message are you sending to your child?
I don't know.
So the wrong message. The
wrong
message. Perfect. Okay, that's a good enough answer. So the message that you're sending to your child is that I basically can't deal with you right now, and I can't really deal with my emotions right now. And if your child has any feeling with regard to abandonment or neglect or feeling really guilty, it might bring up the abandonment feeling of a mother or a father just leaving the room because they can't handle a heated discussion. So when I talk about calling out the process, one thing that somebody might be able to say is, you know what, honey, Johnny, whatever, I'm really frustrated right now. And I really am having a lot of emotions, and I'm very frustrated, and I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to, you know, let's talk about this in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So you're kind of closing the loop that you're not just leaving and sort of abandoning the conversation, but you're at least calling out what you might be experiencing.
Talking with Dr. Joanna Savarese. Her website is sdbrainworks.com. Things must be really calm at your house.
Well, I have four children under the age of six, and actually, sorry, under the age of seven. And for a long time, I had four kids under the age of three. So calm is a word that we're just starting to understand, but it's calmer.
Calmer.
But I'm a human being, so I don't always practice what I preach.
Sure.
But I at least I try to.
You try. Okay, perfect. Well, when we come back, we're going to hear more from the barefoot lawyer, Ethan Marcus, about his federated alliances, some of the expenses, and some of the other people that are in the group ahead of us when we come back. Talk San Diego. We've been talking with Dr. Joanna Savarese with sdbrainworks.com. That's the website, sdbrainworks.com. We talked about two of her points on our 8-point list of positive ways to talk and listen to your children, but they'd also work for just about anybody, and they're not easy, right? I mean, they're not easy. It takes a little bit of work.
It definitely takes work.
Got it. So she is one of the participants in Ethan's Federated Alliance. So tell us again what it is you're creating over there, Ethan.
Well, it used to be that attorneys would try to do all this themselves, and poorly. And I was one of them. I'm guilty of that. As a certified specialist, I get a little bit of psychological training, just enough to think that I know what I'm doing and to cause a lot of damage. And one of the things that I might try to do is exactly what might be considered in the past hour, which is to talk to clients about how they might relate better to their children, how they might do things that not only would assist them at home, but also would present better in court. And ultimately, I recognized that I was practicing therapy without a license. And so that's what piqued my interest in getting people involved who actually did this exact sort of thing. And so what I heard from Dr. Savarese is exactly the recipe for my dilemma. I mean, I have tried to explain to clients a lot of times that responsibility, blame, fault, all of those things are power. If something is your fault, it means you can change it. It's in your hands. But I am not equipped to help people take that next step. And it's so, so nice, such a relief to be able to rely on somebody whose profession it is to deal with this exact thing and to be able to tell a client with confidence, look, this isn't my area. I've identified the issue and I know someone who can help you.
So what other professionals do you expect to have in your group?
You know, family law is the broadest, most complex area of law there is because it touches every other area of law and life. And so some of the people that we're already dealing with, I mean, starting with you and how we met, I mean, we require and rely on people in the real estate business who are absolutely top-notch, both as expert witnesses and to facilitate the transition of assets from in terms of ownership or liquidation or acquisition. So it starts there, but we also private investigators, forensic CPAs, visitation monitors for people who are rehabilitating their relationship with their children, education attorneys, immigration attorneys, trust attorneys, people to help redraft wills, real estate attorneys, high conflict coaches. We talked in the last section about being cautious before you send that email and the cathartic experience of typing it and maybe not sending it. But it's really helpful, and there's professionals now who will actually coach you through the process. People who have been through the process, have gone through their own litigation, have gone through their own trainings, and can actually help you moderate for tone and take the message that you want to send and turn it into something that better communicates what you're trying to say, while not putting you in a position where you might displease a third party who is judging every single thing you say.
Talking with Mr. Ethan Marcus, he is the Barefoot Lawyer. His website is barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. So you start telling me that there's all these other professionals that are going to be involved. I start seeing dollar signs. I mean, it sounds expensive, right? that sounds very, very promotional.
I start with the embarrassed and the answer is it is. It's a very expensive process, and you probably should know that going ahead. And the best attorneys and the best professionals tell you exactly how expensive it is. And the very best can tell you how expensive it is in comparison to how expensive it could be. So, for example, with regards to the issue of custody, where psychologists get involved and parents are being evaluated and decisions are being made as to who is going to have a higher time percentage with children, I have to tell you, the most expensive cases are where the evaluation goes against your client, and then you end up with the unenviable task of presenting a case against the court's expert to get things turned around. Now, I will also tell you that I have not had a single case in over 20 years where a custody evaluator has come out with a recommendation where if it was against my client that I wasn't able to turn the situation around and rehabilitate it. There has always been something that can be done. But I also have to tell you, that was an expensive endeavor. We're talking about a process whereby the client now has to rehabilitate him or herself from the way that person was observed by the forensic, and presenting that to a court in a way where the court is convinced that it wants to do something other than what is being recommended. It is so much cheaper if in advance of the evaluation, this party went through that process so that when the evaluation was happening, the client was already in a position to present him or herself in the best light. They have developed, they're not changing who they are, but they have developed who they are in a way that best serves the children and best presents themselves to the outside world. They're not hiding who they are, but they're learning how to manage it in a way that's beneficial.
And we're talking with Mr. Ethan Marcus from the Marcus Family Law Center. I run into that all the time where I know the process that should be laid out, and convincing them to not go ahead and repeat the same mistakes that you've seen time and time again, taking the extra step to go meet with an additional professional so the perception is different. you know, to the, in your case, it's to the court. In my case, it's to a buyer or a seller is what my situation is. And we repeat the same process with appraisers, the same process with buyers, and the same process with sellers. I've seen the pitfalls all the time, and it is unfortunately the rare case that I'm able to convince someone that if you don't do this, this could happen. Because usually doing this costs a little bit more, like in your situation, a little bit more, but the downside and digging yourself out of that hole is so much more, well, emotionally and financially painful. That preventing from the what-if situation is very difficult to convince people of, but as you mentioned, can be a much better financially way to go around it.
Well, there's that that phrase, right? Penny wise and pound foolish. Fortunately now, with tens of thousands of clients, I have a representative statistical sample. I can tell people what the likelihood of particular outcomes, given different budgets and financial strategies, what's likely to happen. And I can do it with a large sense of credibility. And in fact, now that part of our Federated Alliance includes coaches, people who have been through the process and have gotten training, these people can say, I went through this court process. Let me tell you how it happened, where it went wrong and where it went right, and how I can help you make it go right for you where it might not have gotten, might not have gotten so well for me.
So these are lay people, so to speak, that have just had the experience of going through it themselves.
They're primarily lay people in that they might not be licensed, but they're often certificated in several endeavors. For example, I have one coach who has a number of certificates and trainings with regards to children of special needs. Okay. And I really like relying on that person in cases of custody disputes where the kids need special consideration.
I can certainly see how a client, you know, may take have a little bit of a wall up from other services you might offer because ultimately they end up costing more. But I can really see how having this advocate there who has been through it, potentially through a divorce, and is able to explain the pitfalls of their case as a really valuable tool. Frankly, I've never heard of that before. Is that common?
It is not common. It is new. We're breaking ground. It's something that should have happened a long time ago, and I don't have any pride in being involved in this process, other than I'm glad I'm in it. But I don't mean that I think that I'm any particular great person. I think I stumbled into it. I think, as I said earlier, that in large part it's that I'm, you stand on the shoulders of giants, and I learned from your example, Ryan. I'm stumbling over my words now because you humble me, but the idea of bringing variant and disparate professionals together as a community to help an individual and make a team, I think that's absolutely what people need. And I think it is going to be a model that other people emulate, and more power to them. And, you know, it's not something I'm going to be concerned about if there's going to be competition or whatever. But right now, as far as I can tell, it's unique.
Yeah, I think so too. We're talking with Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center. His website is barefootlawyer.com, barefootlawyer.com. And you're calling these people coaches? Is that what you're calling it? What are you calling these people that have been through the divorce?
The last people we talked about was coaches, although you use the word advocacy, and we have that too.
Okay.
In custody disputes, a lot of times you'll have a parent who will say, well, I'm doing everything the school experts are recommending. Well, school experts often have their own pressures with regards to what they can offer. And sometimes in situations like that, the parents benefit from an advocate in the school situation. And that advocate not only can help the children in that school situation, but also may be ideal in terms of presentation in court.
Wonderful, wonderful. We heard it here first, the introduction of coaches into the divorce process, Marcus Family Law Center. When we come back, we're going to hear more from San Diego Brainworks, Dr. Joanna Savarese, with the 8 positive ways to talk and listen to your children. We got 6 left ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center. His website, barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. San Diego Brainworks. What is that? What does that mean?
So San Diego Brainworks is a psychology and neuropsychology private practice in San Diego. So I am co-owner and co-director of San Diego Brainworks. And we are both a psychology practice in that we have a handful, and I mean, a large handful of psychology clients that we see for general psychotherapy, depression, anxiety, ADHD, divorce. I mean, we kind of cover it all, trauma. And then we also have about, I would say, three quarters of our practice is neuropsychology and psychological testing. And so basically, if anybody that has, wants to be assessed for like ADHD or maybe a learning disability, autism spectrum disorder, concussions, we see everything. So we see anybody that has something going on cognitively that needs to be evaluated. And a lot of times, people come to a neuropsychologist for things like clarifying a diagnosis. Is this dementia? Is it not dementia? Is it pseudo-dementia? Is it mild cognitive impairment? We do, a lot of assessment for ADHD. Is this ADHD? And if it's ADHD, how would you, properly treat ADHD? What are your recommendations? We do evaluations for learning disabilities. What does this child, how do they learn best? What are some of their strengths and weaknesses? And how would that actually be applied to the educational setting? So for, what would that look like in the classroom? And then we also do, personality evaluations and psychological evaluations to help differentiate different diagnoses. So we have sort of two components. One is our psychological services, and the other one is our neuropsychological and psychological testing services.
Sounds complicated.
Isn't life complicated?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Talking with Dr. Joanna Savarese, we're talking about San Diego Brainworks, her website, sdbrainworks.com, sdbrainworks.com. So the Venn diagram, so to speak, of your overlap here through the Federated Alliance, as we've described, really what we wanted to point out is you have a business ongoing, and that's what one of the things Ethan pointed out to is he's bringing in established professionals to be part of the alliance. So this is not new for you. You've been doing it on your own, so to speak, for a while, and now you're applying that model to the, I guess the divorce or the marriage resolution, and become a part of that alliance. And through that, and through your work there at San Diego Brainworks, you've created this Positive Ways to Talk and Teach Children. I would imagine this is something you go through with your clients all the time.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
All right. Teach your child about what they may be experiencing. We have to teach them what they're experiencing. They don't know.
Right. Children are not actually that in tune with their emotions. Some are. Some are. Some are quite sophisticated psychologically for their age, and some really have no idea what they're experiencing. Oftentimes, kids will experience emotions outwardly, and so it often manifests as behaviors. So I can give, I'll give my example in a few minutes, but we are, some of it is our job to teach our kids what they might be experiencing and what they might be feeling. I mean, we can do that through just conversations with our children. There are certain things that you can also do, like you can get out a feeling chart. I mean, there's charts that you can just really Google, like feeling chart, and this chart will come up with lots of different faces and associated emotions. And you can talk to your kids about what emotions are. I mean, I bet if you ask your child, what is an emotion, they might not be able to really tell you what that is or what they are. Another thing are little books by Roger Hargreaves, and they're like Mr. Funny, Mr. Nervous books, and they kind of go over different emotions. These worked really well actually with my own children to help identify what they might be feeling. And it also gives a little bit of some tools and strategies that you can use like in their Mr. Nervous book. A lot of times it's our job to explain to our children what they might be experiencing, what they're feeling. In particular, when people are going through a divorce or a traumatic situation and they're acting out overt behaviors, they're misbehaving, they're not listening, the parent might need to say to the child, honey, like, I think you might be going through a really hard time right now because mommy and daddy are divorcing, or because mommy and daddy are, going through a situation, or because maybe, your doggy died. So we have to be, as parents, we have to be in tune enough to understand that our children's behaviors And when they're not positive behaviors, are often telling us that something might be happening internally. I can give a personal example. You know, my son, I had him try out for a competitive soccer team at the age of 7. So, you know, I'm a big soccer player and played competitive soccer my whole life. So it was very important for him to be on a competitive soccer team. And he obviously knew that. So going into his tryout, we actually got to the field and it was a weird night in, I think it was over in the fall where it was like really raining, like almost hailing, and they were having his tryout. And they continued to have the tryout even though it was raining. And my son would not get out of the car. And my son is not a shy child. He's a pretty confident boy, but he would not get out of the car. And so finally we walked back to the car and we sat down and I said to him, you know, honey, I think you might be nervous. And he just started crying and crying, but he didn't know what he was experiencing. And so I had to really pull it out of him that what he might be experiencing is nervousness. And once he was able to sort of have that cathartic moment, like we talked about earlier, letting and releasing those feelings, he was able to go out and play some soccer. But it was through a little bit of being in tune with his behavior. You know, I could have just been like, come on, you know, get on the field, who, you know, enough of this kind of behavior, but that would have made the situation worse. So it's really important for parents to try to identify and validate the child for the emotion that they might be experiencing if it's coming out as sort of behavioral, or they're refusing to do something, they don't want to go up to their recital, they don't want to go to their play. There are feelings underneath there that need to be addressed, and typically once those feelings are addressed, the child is more likely to carry on. And one of the things that you can do as a parent is what's called reflective listening. So after you've sort of taught them a little bit about what it is that they may have heard you talk about their feelings, is to have them repeat that back to you.
Interesting. Repeat it back to you.
Repeat it back to you. So like, so, you know, what did mommy, so if you were to sum it up.
I just repeated it.
Yes, thank you. That was good. That was good. I got that.
Well, I think what you're saying here, and it's very obvious, is by identifying what the emotion is, there's an opportunity to conquer it.
Right.
Or in your case, bring it out, endorse it, and solve.
And then move forward.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. We are talking with Dr. Joanna Savarese. Her website, sdbrainworks.com. That's the website. sdbrainworks.com. Today we talked about positive ways to talk and listen to your children, but it'll work for just about everybody. There, she's got 8 points on here. We only really touched on about 3 of them. You can go to our website for more information. Also, we spoke with Ethan Marcus, Marcus Family Law Center, 5-time repeat offender. His website, barefootlawyer.com. That's the website, barefootlawyer.com. Thank you, too, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Everybody out there, thank you for listening. Until next week.